Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're going to talk about the Oklahoma Girl Scout murders.
I'm actually kind of excited about this one right here because I've heard of it.
Right. But
I don't know like the full details on it.
Right.
And everything. So you've been telling me off and on about this one for a while. And I've been kind of wondering when we was going to get to this one.
Yes. It's a very old but very prominent, one of our wildest cases in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this one was requested.
Oh.
Yes.
Nice.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for requesting.
Keep them up.
Keep them coming. Hey, and don't forget that you guys can also, not only can you catch us on Podbean and
YouTube
and all that stuff, you know, you can also catch us on Player FM, Boom Play. You know, we got a list on our Facebook page and everything.
Yes.
Everybody that we're actually, all of our stuff's getting distributed out to. So make sure you guys go and like, subscribe, share.
Tell your friends.
Yep, tell everybody. All right, let's get into it.
All right. So today we're going to talk about three little girls. We got Lori Farmer, who is age 8, Michelle Goussey, who is age 9, and Denise Milner, who is age 10. We're going to go to Locust Grove, Oklahoma in 1977. There was a Girl Scout camp here named Camp Scott, and more than more than 100 Girl Scouts arrived at Camp Scott on Sunday, June 12th, for a week-long camping stay. Now, some reports are that this was a two-week-long camp stay. I believe Denise's letter to home said it was a two-week stay, but a lot of things are reporting it was a one-week-long camp. Either way, the girls arrived, and the camp had actually been in operation since 1928, so this was their 49th year of campers coming out. This camp spans 410 acres, so the campers could spend their days hiking, swimming, doing all kinds of outdoor activities, and at night they slept in tents. But these weren't little pup tents that were staked to the ground. They were actually sturdy tents set up off the ground on wooden platforms, and each one had four cots inside. This was pretty nice setup for being out in the middle of the woods. And this year was going to be no different, and the campers were very excited to go, except for Denise.
Yeah, Denise didn't want to be away from her mom. It's hard for a parent to want their kids, you know, they want to keep their kids close and everything, but at the same time, they want to, you know, teach them independence. And
absolutely.
And everything. Our son, you know, he went to camp.
Electric camp.
Yeah, he went to electric camp, I think Lake Region or something. They put on a camp for him.
Yes.
And, you know, he had a hard time for the first couple of days, but then by the end of that trip, he had such a blast and everything.
He did learn a lot.
Yeah, he learned a lot. And I mean, they had videos of him, you know, their little dance and stuff. And
oh, yeah, that camp actually sent us like a little USB drive, a little thumb drive that had a bunch of pictures on it, like all the pictures they took at camp. So it was pretty cool. And these days, you know, kids have their cell phones, so we could talk to him regularly and in between activities and things. But back then, they didn't have that.
No, they didn't have that.
So when you left for camp, you were isolated. Yeah. It was kind of different. And one of the camp counselors actually noticed that Denise was having a hard time leaving her mom because they all got on the bus at the Girl Scout headquarters in Tulsa, and then they were bussed out to Locust Grove. So when she saw that Denise wasn't wanting to leave her mom, she actually went over, introduced herself. She sat next to Denise on the bus on the way to camp because Denise was the only African-American girl there, as well as this was her first time camping. So the counselors really tried to make her feel at home and stay with her until she felt more comfortable and safe. Now, once at camp, she was taken to Kiowa Tent Number 8, which is where she met her bunkmates, Lori and Michelle. And even though they were strangers, the three hit it off and were best friends before you even know it.
Yeah, and that's how it goes most of the time, you know, because I can remember going to camp, you know, when I was a kid, and like that first day of basically it's the introduction.
Yes.
When you get there and everything, you meet everybody, and basically you find your crew.
find your homies.
Yeah, you find your people that you're going to be with for that whole time.
Right.
And I mean, and you guys do all the events together and you plan out everything. And I mean, you make the most of it.
Right. I've never been to camp, so I'll have to take your word for it.
I just remember that when I was in the Cub Scouts and stuff. You know, when I was a kid. So
very similar. Now, to make this one a little different, there was a thunderstorm rolling in that night right after dinner, so it put an early end to day one, and all the girls had to go to their tents, and lights out was around 8:30. Another camper wrote in her diary that night that it was so dark out in the woods that she couldn't tell if her eyes were opened or closed. That's pretty dark.
That's really dark.
Yes, which I can see because they're way out in the woods. Mm-hmm. The girls in tent 8 actually wrote letters to home, like I mentioned before they went to bed, telling their families about their new friends and what all they did that day. But Denise's letter was not so positive. Her letter said that she wanted to come home and she didn't want to stay for the 2 weeks. Counselors reported having to quiet the campers because they were giggling and up pretty late, which is what you'd expect with all the new best friends running around there. But then it got a little weird. One counselor reported hearing an animal sound at around 1 to 1:30 a.m. She said she went out to investigate, and as she got closer to the noise, like she would have her flashlight in front of her, obviously to see where she's going, and as she would walk closer to where the noise was, it would stop. When she would turn and move her flashlight in the opposite direction, it would start again. Now, after 2 times of this happening, she said that she thought it was an animal that was going to attack her if she got too close, so she went back to her tent to be safe. That's a decision that she still struggles with to this day. A camper reported someone shining a flashlight into her eyes about 30 minutes after that, around 2 a.m. But the saddest report was at around 3 a.m., one of the campers said she heard a scream and someone crying for their mama.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah, that's sad. At around 6 the next morning, one of the camp counselors was going to take a shower when she saw Denise's body laying on the ground on top of her sleeping bag. Initially, she wondered why one of the girls would be sleeping out there like that, but she soon realized that she was not sleeping. And the counselor only registered Denise's body at first because that's all she saw, her body and some sleeping bags. She ran for help and came back with the camp director and a nurse. And they unzipped the other sleeping bags, finding the bodies of Lori and Michelle. The autopsies would show that Lori and Michelle died from blunt force trauma to the head, while Denise had been beaten as well as strangled with some type of a ligature, and all three had been sexually assaulted. It was later determined that the attack had taken place inside their tent, and the bodies were moved after to where they were found at the base of a tree on the trail by the showers, which is around 150 yards from their tent. And the other campers were kept away from the scene until they could be picked up.
Man, to be a parent, waiting for your child, not knowing what was going on, and your child doesn't ever, you know, come over for you to take them home, that's pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's sad to be standing there and all the other kids come to their parents, and then there you are. So then you instantly know.
Yeah, so you know something terrible happened.
Ugh. But the investigation began very quickly. There was a big red flashlight found on top of the girls' bodies that had a smudged fingerprint on the lens. It looked like someone had taped black plastic over the light part of it, like maybe a piece of a trash bag, to possibly dull the light enough not to be noticed but still be able to use it to see. There were footprints inside the tent in blood that belonged to a size 9.5 shoe, as well as multiple footprints outside in the mud that were reportedly different sizes.
Now, remember the size 9.5 shoe.
Yes.
For later on in this conversation.
Yes.
Okay, good.
It is pertinent. They believe that the intruder came in through the backside of the tent, and tent number 8 was actually the furthest tent away from where the counselors were. The owner of the camp caught a little heat early on because they contacted their insurance company and a lawyer before notifying the victim's parents. And also, 2 months before camp opened, when the counselors came to get things set up and ready, they reported to the director that their bags had been thrown all over their tents and outside. Also, there was a box of donuts where someone had eaten all the donuts in the box but left a note that said, "We are on a mission to kill three girls in Tent 1. And it was signed, "The Killer." And at the bottom of the note was a drawing of someone being hanged. They decided that this was just a prank, so they never contacted authorities.
And they went ahead and, you know, had all the campers come, and even if it was a prank, you know, that's not really something that you want to leave up to chance.
Right.
And even at that, I mean, you don't want to leave, if you do have camp, you know, put like a counselor per tent.
Yeah.
Or scoot the tents in closer.
Take extra precautions.
Yes. I mean, just take extra precautions on this stuff.
On the off chance, you never know.
I mean, yeah, just, you had the threat.
Exactly.
Whether it's a joke or not, take it serious.
Exactly. And that's how a lot of people felt when this came out, because they were like, why not just shut the camp down? But hindsight is 2020. And at the time, I guess they just didn't really see it as that big of a deal. But the police, having this information, realized that this was something that was probably planned, because if that was 2 months before and then this happened night one, somebody planned this out. They knew what tent to hit. They knew, you know, and the thunderstorm was probably the best cover.
And remember the 9.5 shoe.
Yes.
And then remember the note that says, "We are on a mission."
We.
We.
We. Yes.
Move forward.
So the police actually were able to eliminate all the men who were on the campgrounds and men that lived in the area. And they began to zero in on one man, Gene Leroy Hart. He was a convicted rapist, kidnapper, burglar, and had escaped jail twice. He had actually currently been on the run after his second escape when these murders happened. Hart was a Cherokee native who was a known outdoorsman that was known for being able to survive off the land. He also had many ties in the native community where he could stay with people when he was out on the run. Tracking dogs found a crowbar on June 16th that police believed to be the murder weapon, and they found a cave a few miles away that appeared like someone had been staying in it. Inside, they found some glasses that they believed were taken from the camp, tape matching tape that they had found at the crime scene, a flashlight battery, and pictures. These pictures had a total of three women in them, and they were able to tie them back to Hart because he, while he was out on work release when he was in prison, he actually worked as a photo assistant for a wedding photographer, and these were pictures that wedding photographer had taken. This cave was a few hundred feet from a cellar and the foundation that had been Hart's childhood home, so that puts him knowing the area well and it being somewhere he's familiar with and probably feels safe. And there was another cave nearby that had writing on the wall saying, "The killer was here. Bye-bye, fools. 77-6-17.
And I think that there was like the date.
Right.
What was it, 5 days?
5 days after they arrived at camp.
So that happened on the 12th.
Yes. Well,
no.
Early morning of the 13th, maybe. It's hard to say.
So whenever this happened, and this, they went into hiding in this cave, and then they put that.
Signed it. Like, why would you sign the wall? Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking.
And date it.
Okay. And date it, yeah. So basically, they were just telling them, "We've been here this whole time."
Right. Just hanging out. And that's another thing, because they started their investigation immediately. So that would mean that if he did sign this wall 5 days later, he was still there. He was, while they're investigating, he's right there.
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, they did go a little wild with their theories, I can say that now, because they said he was using, and I quote, "Native American magic," because there were four spots where fires had been in one of the caves, which they saw as ritualistic. The canine dogs would lose their scents when they were following really quickly at the campsite. So like immediately after catching the scent, they would take a couple of steps and lose it. So they were saying that Hart could actually shapeshift and turn into a bird. Then two of the canine dogs that were helping track actually suddenly died. So the police were blaming that on the magic as well.
Sounds like a lot of racism to me.
Yeah, they can call it magic all they want, but they're being racist.
I mean, honestly, those, to me, they should have been pulled off and everything during this investigation.
The cops should have
been. Yeah, because, I mean, that's just...
Well, it gets worse because they actually described him as, and I quote, a person who doesn't belong to what we accept as the normal human race.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, just because they think he's a shapeshifter. I mean, I don't even think there's ever been a report of a shapeshifter ever.
Not here.
Not here in Oklahoma. I mean, Arizona, you know, they had the, what was it called?
The Night Walkers or whatever. Yeah.
You know, but that's all myths.
Supposedly.
You know? I mean, that's all myths. You know what I mean? But I think it's like New Mexico and Arizona and stuff like that. That's where they were, always had the myths of the shapeshifters and stuff.
That's true. But, you know, we are talking about the 70s. And so things were a little more out there back then. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why you could say that he was more protected by the Native community, because they were saying that this really was looking like a setup, that they obviously didn't know much about Native American culture, and they were basically setting him up to take the fall for something he didn't do and blame it on his Native American heritage.
Yeah.
But Hart was charged with the murders at Camp Scott. And on July 30th, he spoke through the American Indian Movement to the police, and he denied any part in the murders. And he said he would keep running because if he surrendered, he would, quote, have the hell shot out of him. His native community believed that he was being railroaded, so they were going to continue assisting him. And on April 6th of 1978, a tip came in that Hart was staying with a Cherokee medicine man, and he was finally arrested. The sperm evidence presented in the case showed that only 0.0020% of the population met the unique requirements, and Hart was one of them. The fingerprint that was on the flashlight lens, unfortunately, was too smudged to get a valid identification. And Hart wore, here you go, here's your size 9.5 shoe they found in the blood print. Hart actually wore an 11.5 shoe, not a 9.5. Yes. Now, I'm not saying you can't put your 11.5 foot into a 9.5, but why would you?
No.
But if you're living off the land, you kind of take what you can get, so.
Yeah, but, I mean, when he was arrested, they probably would have found him with some 9.5 shoes.
Oh, my goodness, probably.
I mean, honestly.
True.
If he's that bad off, he's not going to just get rid of some shoes if that's his only pair of shoes.
That's true. There were hairs from the crime scene that could have belonged to a Native American. That's all they could pinpoint back then with DNA evidence. So the evidence is not presenting as an open and shut case. And remember the glasses that they found. Hart actually came out and said that they were from one of his previous rape victims, but claims that all the other evidence that the police had was planted. And this was enough for the jury to find him not guilty. Remember, he was on the run and was caught while he was an escapee, so he did get sent back to prison anyways to finish out his 300 years remaining on his sentence for his prior charges. And it's reported that about a month after returning to prison, Hart finished a workout like he would normally do working out, and then he died of a heart attack.
So a month later...
Yeah.
You know.
Quick.
So now that he's gone, there goes any new DNA that they could do more testing now that technology is better.
Right. They're left with just what they have from the 70s, which, as we know, a lot of DNA degrades over time, and you only have so much of a sample, so you're going to run out as you go.
And they probably didn't get enough. With.
Probably not, because they didn't really think about how far technology could advance. Yeah. And they have tested the DNA that they have many, many times, and it's not getting any fresher or any better. Semen from the pillowcase was tested in 1989, and they were able to reconfirm Hart as a suspect based on that. But it wasn't definitive enough to narrow down the pool of suspects at the time. What they have to match up to Hart also applies to one in about 7,700 Native Americans. But it was a 3 out of 5 match to Hart's DNA. In 2022, more testing of the DNA evidence strongly suggested that Hart was involved, and they were able to rule out every other suspect except for him. So they're pretty convinced still to this day that he was guilty.
So they did have other suspects. It seems like they went straight to him for the most part, but they didn't. I mean, basically, it looks like they was gunning for him.
Right. I mean, they said that they ruled out every other male in the area, but they didn't say how or anything like that. And now the last testing was in 2022. So that's pretty up to date to where we are now. Yeah. And they're saying that even that ruled out every other suspect.
Yeah, but remember the note. It says, we are on a mission.
Very true. Very true. Now, they did follow up on other tips. The sheriff, actually, at the time, had received a confession from a man in prison named Buddy Bristol, saying that he had gone with several others to the campsite that night, and one of the other men that he was with actually murdered the girls. Some of the men he named are still living in the community today, supposedly. So they could test them, too. In 2011... ex-con John Russell made a movie saying that convicted murderer Carl Lee Myers confessed to the killings at Camp Scott, but that police ignored Russell when he tried to tell them. Myers was convicted of murder, burglary, and assault with intent to commit rape. And then there was a waitress who testified in Hart's trial that a man named William Stevens was in the diner she worked at that morning, and that he was acting very nervous. Stevens was also a convicted rapist, and he reportedly was being seen on the campgrounds just days before the murders. A friend of Stevens also said that not only did he loan Stevens the flashlight that they found at the crime scene, but that Stevens had confessed to him to being the one who murdered the girls back in October of 1977.
So I definitely had a bunch of different stories coming in.
Definitely.
I mean, and they were, I mean, they were not even stories. They had a lot of confessions coming in.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But as we've seen in some cases before, a lot of people will false confess.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking about confessing like after Hart already died.
Right. True. What's the point?
They could have just let it go with him.
Yeah, but some people want the notoriety from it.
Yeah.
They want to be known as the person who did it. And that's why people false confess. They want the attention. They want better meals in prison. They want to be moved to better facilities because it changes your status if you have
like
more.
Like I said, the note said, we are on a mission.
Yes. And yes. Now, in Oklahoma, back in 2020, we had the McGirt ruling. And it ruled that criminal cases involving tribal members on tribal land should be tried in tribal court and not in state court. So in the summer of 2023, Cherokee Nation law enforcement opened their own investigation into the case. So hopefully they can put a fresh perspective on it from the other side, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if the community, the Native American community, still believe that he was being railroaded,
yeah,
they're going to look at it from a whole different angle.
Well, yeah, and you know, now tribal, you know, they've got so much more technology.
Yeah,
now
they do.
Even compared to what regular law enforcement and stuff like
the
that,
state,
the state, you know what I mean? They're really pushing forward with this. I mean, not only with this, but with
everything,
taking on cases like this.
Right, right. Now, the Farmer and Milner families actually tried to sue the Magic Empire Scout Council in 1985, but unfortunately they lost. And Camp Scott never reopened after the murders, and it's reportedly used as hunting land today. So there was never another camp.
Why after would this. There be?
Right. No, who? No, who would send their
who,
kid?
I mean, who? Yeah, they would never have another camper there ever no. again.
No.
So yeah, I mean, the only smart move would be to close
to it. To close it, yeah, and they
I'm
did.
Surprised they're even doing hunting there.
Well, it's all cleared off now, and since it's so many acres of just trees and forest and. Woodlands.
Yeah.
It seems like the perfect spot.
Yeah. But anyway, so like I was saying, we are on a mission. I think that these other guys that confessed actually had something to do with it myself.
But which one? There was three.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. Like when I, you know, what I, you know, I've said it before is just, You're not gonna go and snag up one little girl without the other little girls just screaming their heads off.
Maybe.
And everything. And there was a report. One of the campers said that she heard one of the girls scream, "Mama."
Right. True. And outside.
Outside.
It's outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. My thing is, I don't think Hart did it by himself, because if there was still a 9.5 shoe, did they see what size shoes these other guys wore?
Don't know. They just said that they were able to eliminate every other suspect.
Well, I don't think they did enough.
Because but they don't say if these three were even suspects.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you got three guys that are coming out, one dude makes a movie.
He did, yes.
And basically saying, I did it.
Well, he's saying that another
convicted. Okay, Carl Lee Myers.
Right.
Okay, so he did the movie saying that this guy did it.
Right.
And that this guy confessed to it.
Yes.
And everything else, look into it.
That's feeling pretty set in your story.
Because, I mean, after that right there, I mean, every one of these guys right here are convicted. Felons.
True.
They're all in prison. They've all been in prison.
Yes.
That means there's records on everything from their feet to their hands.
Very true. They do make note of everything.
Everything.
Yes.
So all they had to do was say, oh, no, this guy don't have a 9.5.
But
nope.
There were multiple shoe prints.
Exactly. But what they could confirm was a 9.5.
That was in the blood in the tent. Yes.
So... that's what I'm saying. I don't think that they did. I don't think that they did their job fully.
Okay.
That's my opinion on it.
That's your take?
Yep.
Okay. So you're not saying that Hart is innocent. You're just saying that he was not alone.
No, because, you know, his semen actually matched up the closest.
It did. 3 out of 5 match.
Now, it wasn't like a perfect match, but now, I mean, they could probably match it up perfectly now.
Maybe.
Even with DNA testing, I bet they could match it up damn near spot on. But they have to go with what they had.
Right. But with all the genealogy and cases that are being solved now with the ancestry and the...
yeah.
1, 2, 3, and all the things that they're doing now, they're matching familial DNA. So they could just, if they could get the family members of Hart to agree, they could probably even get a pretty close match.
Oh, you know, it's a matter of time where
somebody's going to do something.
Somebody's going to be like, oh, where all do I come from?
I said 1, 2, 3. I meant 23 and me.
23 and me.
I said 1, 2, 3. But another interesting thing to this case is that Kristen Chenoweth, who is a very talented actress,
yes,
Broadway star, singer, she actually was supposed to go to camp on this day.
Yes, that's right. I remember you saying that.
Yes, and I can't help but think in my brain, all these tents had 4 cots. Mm-hmm. All the tents had 4 campers in them, except tent 8, which only had 3. So had she gone, there was a probability that she would have been in that tent.
Oh, no, there were a high yeah. probability that she would have been in that tent.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, her parents are very, very fortunate.
Yes.
That, you know, she didn't go.
It was a very fortunate twist of fate.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just, and she's a great actress. She's, you know, she's just awesome.
She's funny.
All the way around. Yes. And she actually did the documentary.
She was involved. Yeah.
And everything. So she's been involved in this for a while because she's.
Well, that weighs on her.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, that's one thing. But yeah, I remember you telling me.
Yeah.
About that.
Our little tidbit.
Yeah. A little tidbit in there.
Well, so that's it. That's the Girl Scout murders. That's where we're at now. We might have some new stuff. Hopefully, we'd have some new stuff come through in the next year or so.
Yeah, because they're doing new testing now, so hopefully.
And like I said, they'll look at it from a whole different angle, so there's no telling what they might dig up. Plus, it's so many years later, you got to think of deathbed confessions and things like that come into play, because some of these people are now older, and they may want to clear their conscience before they go.
True.
Or with the genealogy testing and stuff like that, it might just come out that way. You never know. There's so many things that could go in this case.
You're absolutely right.
But we're watching it. It's one of the most high-profile cases in Oklahoma, so.
And it has been for years.
It will be until it's solved, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, we appreciate y'all listening. Make sure you guys come in for the next one.
Tell your friends.
Bye.
Bye.